Well, good evening, everyone. It's great to be here. Thank you so much to the folks at Hamilton Road Presbyterian and Baptist Church for having me along tonight. And hopefully tonight will be helpful in some of the issues that we look at with regards to social media. You should have a little handout on your chair if you don't have one of them. There's plenty of spare ones. You can grab one on an empty seat beside you or in front of you. And that's just really kind of an overview or a summary of what we're going to look at. Everything I say, well, everything on the page is going to be covered in what I say. And at the end of that, there's some resources which will be helpful. These are resources that are different from the ones out in the bookstore. So do look at the ones in the bookstore. And then there are some extra resources that you might find helpful as well. But I'll draw your attention to those as we go through. I want to share a story with you, which I heard someone else share recently, and it was about a young boy, and he was on his holidays, and he was on his holidays with his family, and as he was standing at the side of the pool on this family holiday, he gave his dad his phone. I realize I say the word phone a wee bit different to use up here. That's a phone for use, a phone from Ballymena. He gave his dad his phone, and he said, "Dad, I'm going to do a backflip into the swimming pool, and I would love you to take a video for it so that I can post it on Instagram." And his dad said no. And the wee boy said, "Please, Dad, please let me do a backflip into the swimming pool. I'll give you my phone and you can video me it and then I will put it on Instagram." And his dad said, "Absolutely not." And after the son was begging his father for about 20 minutes, finally his dad said, "Okay, you can do the backflip into the swimming pool and I'll video it on one condition. And that condition is that you're not allowed to post it on Instagram or Facebook or any form of social media whatsoever." And the young boy said, "Well, what then would even be the point? What then would even be the point of doing it?" And for some of you, you think that is an absolutely bonkers mindset. For some of you, if you're honest, and maybe if you're slightly younger, not to draw any age demographics, but perhaps you can actually empathize a little bit with that mindset that young boy expressed. But that's the world of social media, and that's the sort of way it's affected our mindset. It's the way it's sort of affected our decisions. And I want to begin really with a disclaimer as we look at this topic, really three disclaimers. The first one is this: I'm not an expert when it comes to social media. Maybe you're disappointed, but unfortunately, I'm not an expert. I'm working through this, as many of you are as well. It's the first disclaimer. The second disclaimer is, not only am I not an expert, I'm not a parent. I'm not a parent to a kid, let alone the crazy creatures that are teenagers. So in many ways, I can't empathize totally with what some of you are going through, and maybe some of the struggles and the battles that you face. And so there might be occasions through this talk where I say something, and you, from a parent's perspective, say, "That's totally naive, that wouldn't work." That probably will happen, so I'm just gonna put my cards on the table and apologize from the off that that could very well be the case, because I'm not a parent. And even in that, in this room, there's probably parents who are in very different circumstances from each other. Your kid might be 6 years old, or your kid, if you can call them that, might be 16 years old. And so the battles that even you face, both as parents, are totally different and totally unique. So hopefully, as we go through this, there'll be some stuff which maybe sticks and is helpful. There'll be other stuff that isn't maybe so helpful, either for you specifically, or just generally for you as a parent. So I'm not an expert. I'm not a parent. Third disclaimer is, perhaps like some of you, I'm a total hypocrite. I'm a total hypocrite because we're all affected, aren't we, by the world of digital media, social media, technology. All of us, if we're honest, though we might not like to admit it, all of us have been sucked in to some degree or another by this social media world. And so I'm not an expert, I'm not a parent, and I'm a hypocrite. So you're probably looking at me thinking, why on earth is this guy doing a talk on social media? And that's a very good question, but hopefully there's something that sticks. If I can offer you anything, and if I can achieve anything tonight, I do with my job get to work with young people, and I also get to work with parents. And so really my desire tonight is to some way bridge the gap, just to some degree bridge the gap between the world that your young people are living in and the world that you're living in. And if I can bridge that gap in any way, shape, or form, hopefully that will be helpful for you and give you some resources which will help you along the way. We're not gonna obviously crack everything in a 1 hour seminar or 45 minute seminar. But I don't know what your opinions are on technology. I'm sure in this room there's a whole wide range of views. Some of you maybe think technology's brilliant, and actually even as a parent, technology's brilliant. I was watching Michael McIntyre actually the other day, and he was talking about how he loves this digital age in which we live in, because it's made parenting so much easier. He says, anytime I'm in the car and the kids are yapping in the background, I just toss them an iPad. Or if he's in bed in the morning and the kids run in at 6 a.m., wanting to do stuff and do everything, he says, just toss them the iPad like a frisbee and it shuts them up. So on one hand, maybe you're here thinking, technology's brilliant. Social media's brilliant. It helps parenting. But in another sense, maybe some of you think it's absolutely terrible. I hate it. It's making my kids antisocial. It's got all these dangers, all these problems. And probably whatever you think about social media or technology, whether you love it or you hate it, what you cannot deny is that it's in some sense taken over our world, hasn't it? It's taken over our world. Technology has taken over our world. There's been many developments. There's been many transformations that have happened in society in the past hundreds of years. Political decisions, financial decisions, all these revolutions. But perhaps none of those transformations has been quite as significant and influential as the technological revolution that we've seen in the past number of years. And so I'm going to ask you, right from the off, I know sometimes in church we don't like interacting with each other. I promise this is the only time I'm going to make you do this or ask you to do this. But just for literally 30 seconds, why don't you turn to the person beside you, right from the off, and reflect on that question that's at the top of your handout. What, from your perspective, do you see as some of the dangers or challenges that technology and social media brings to the younger generation? Discuss that, literally 30 seconds, because I know you can have that kind of awkward moment when you both kind of pitched your idea and then you don't know what to say. But 30 seconds, go for it. Take another 10 seconds. Okay, that'll do. I'm sure there's a whole host of problems that you have come up with, and we're really going to look at them this evening in three categories, which we'll look at in just a minute. But with any change in culture, really we've got three options, don't we? And all these revolutions that we see, all the new cultural changes, you've really got three options. This is stolen from a guy called Mark Driscoll. I think this is very, very helpful. You can see them at the top of your page. With all changes in any culture, any society, you've got three options. Option number one is reject. Option number two is receive. Option number three is redeem. So there are some changes in culture which we've just got to reject. And when you think about technology, there are some aspects of technology and the social media world which we live in, and the consequence of those changes brings about things which we just, as Christians, just need to reject. Clear example that I've listed there is pornography. Pornography is a consequence of the digital world in which we live in. I know there's a seminar on pornography coming up in Hamilton Road Baptist in the next little while. It'll be very beneficial to go to. But that's one aspect of this change in the digital world which we live in, which we just flat out have to reject. But there are other things that we can receive that's been brought about by technological changes in our society. I'm sure if you're here and you go to church, you'll be very thankful for the influence that technology has. You can stream sermons online. You can look up a plethora of resources to understand the Bible better. You can listen to podcasts. You can read blogs. There are many things that technology has brought about which are for the real good, and we can receive those things. But then there's another category of things which we can redeem. That is, there's things which are developed, which can be used for bad or for evil, and commonly are, but can also be used for good. And I think social media falls into that category, largely speaking. It can be used quite commonly for bad, but we can also use it for good. And so those are the three approaches or the three responses we can have to any change in society. And as we said, I really want to look at this under three headings or three ways this technological boom affects young people. Firstly, socially. Secondly, sexually. And then thirdly, spiritually. And those are the ones that we're going to dive into. But the truth is that the reason this is so difficult to look at together is because we are really, in a sense, the first generation who are tackling this problem in its full force, aren't we? I guess for any other problem that we have in society, what we always tend to do is we look at the Bible and we maybe look at the principles in the Bible and then we try and translate them into today, don't we? But that's difficult with this world of social media because it's altogether unique. Jesus and his disciples didn't have iPads or desktop computers or TVs. So it's very difficult to translate their world into our world and to try and find the principles that we need to progress. And we can't even really look to church history because this is so relevant, so new. In fact, social media has only really became a thing in the past 10 years. So that's the challenge that we have. And we see it full force when we look at our young people today, don't we? Because Generation Z, which is the category, which is the current generation of young people, they're defined as Generation Z, if you're born really after the year 2000 or so. They are the most technologically savvy generation that the world has ever seen. They multitask on average across 5 screens between their phones and their laptops and their iPads. They multitask on average across 5 screens. You get different numbers on this. Some may be greater, some may be lower. But they spend about 7 to 8 hours a day on average in front of a screen. And you might find that a little bit difficult to believe. If you do, I would encourage, even you could try this, download a little app on your phone called Moment. Moment. And what Moment does is every time you unlock your phone and you're on your phone, it will start a timer. And at the end of the day, you can count and see how many hours you clock up just on your phone, not on any other device, and you will be staggered the number of hours you can clock up on your phone just in one single day. And not just that, but from January of this year, 2018, it was announced that children as young as age 12 are now eligible for gaming addiction treatment on the NHS. That's a scale of the problem, and I'm sure you've seen this. I see this all the time. Most recently at a youth weekend, I go down into the main room where all the young people are. I didn't think they were there at all, but I went down to the room and turned out there was about 50 of them. I didn't think anyone was in the room, but when in the room, there was 50 of them, I counted, but they were all on their phones, headphones in, looking down, staring at their devices. That's the scale of the problem. It's estimated that 94% of teenagers have a social media account, the most popular of which for those over 16 is Facebook. The most popular of those under 16 is either Snapchat or Instagram, and that's the trend of where young people are today. But the first problem that is brought about by social media that we looked at was socially. Socially, and I'm sure as you turn to the person beside you and you asked each other the question, what are some of the challenges that social media and technology brings? This is one of the ones that primarily will come to your mind, the social challenges that this technology boom brings. And here's the challenge. I'm sure for most of us in this room, don't want to assume your age, but I'm sure for most of us in this room, you can remember life before social media, can't you? You remember growing up in the good old days where you had to call on your friend. Remember you had to go around to their house and you had to call on them. You remember what it was like to be bored? Remember that emotion of being bored? Not having anything to do, you would go and kick stones and pick leaves off trees. You remember what that was like. You remember when you had to have face-to-face conversations. That was your only option, apart from the telephone. But you really were reliant on face-to-face conversations. Social media wasn't a thing. I want you just to think for a moment. Try and get in the shoes of a young person today where they know nothing other than the current world of social media. That's their primary source of interaction with other people. Put your hands up if you've got a Facebook account. Okay, that's more than I actually thought it was gonna be. About 95% of the room have a Facebook account, and you all know what it's like when you get your first Facebook account, okay? Maybe, I don't know when you got it, maybe a year ago, maybe 5 years ago, but you remember some of the difficult decisions you had to go through when you were making a Facebook account. First one, your profile picture, okay? What profile picture am I gonna choose? Me by myself? Me with a celebrity, that says something about me, or me with my cats, that says something else about me, or maybe just something else, I don't want to be in the photo at all. What are your interests? What are your hobbies? You think, well, I like fishing, but I don't really want people to know that I like fishing. It's kind of a secret pleasure, and maybe climbing, something like that. I don't climb, but I want people to think that I'm outdoors and active, so I'll put climbing, and you go for climbing, and then other interests, and you don't really know what to go for, and you kind of say, well, I like children. You don't like children, but you want to meet a woman, so you put children. And all of a sudden, you start creating this profile, not of who you truly are, but of the person you want other people to think that you are. And we find that funny because we acknowledge that it's a bit fake, don't we? Because we remember life before that. We remember the process of building real, authentic relationships face-to-face, but honestly, try and get into the shoes of a 16-year-old or a 14-year-old, and that is all they've ever known, that blur of reality and projection. That's all they've ever known. And that's a staggering thought whenever you really try and think about it. Their primary means of communicating with others has always been through the means of projecting themselves to be someone that they're not. That takes its toll on you. Where the primary means of communication you've ever had with other people is by way of projecting yourself to be someone that you're not. And here's why this is even more important, because social media has an effect on all of us. Whether you're 15 or whether you're 65, social media has an effect on all of us, whether we like to admit it or we don't. But the effects on teenagers is more profound for this simple reason. Teenagers are already going through a difficult phase of life, and that phase is called adolescence. You remember adolescence. For you, as an adolescent, in and of itself, without the burden of social media, adolescence was already a difficult phase, wasn't it? And the difficulty was because you were going through this transitional phase of life where you were kind of stepping away from the primary influence just of your family and stepping into a kind of broader tribe of being influenced by your peers. You're trying to connect the dots between your family and your peers and trying to find your place in the world. You kind of remember what that was like as an adolescent and some of the struggles you had perhaps as an early teenager. But this current generation have it doubly tough, don't they? Because they don't just have the already stressful phase of adolescence. They've got that coupled with the pressures of projecting yourself via social media. In other words, they have it doubly tough. Because adolescents have always struggled with fitting in with the crowd, but now it's never over. At least when you went home from school, you could switch off. But now it's 24/7. Consider this quote, it's down on your page from James K.A. Smith. Here's what he says. The teenager at home does not escape the game of self-consciousness. Instead, she's constantly aware of herself being on display, and she is regularly aware of the exhibitions of her others. Her Twitter feed incessantly updates her about all the exciting, hip things she's not doing with the popular girls. Her Facebook pings nonstop with photos that highlight how boring her homebound existence is. And so she is compelled to constantly be on and updating and checking in. The competition for coolness never stops. She's constantly aware of herself and unable to lose herself in the pleasures of solitude, burrowing into a novel, pouring herself out in a journal, playing with fanciful forms in a sketch pad. Every space is a kind of visual echo chamber. We're no longer seen doing something. We're doing something to be seen. You see the problem? We're raising a generation of people who literally are not one little bit comfortable in their own skin. And not just that, we're raising a generation of people who feel very, very comfortable and very used to putting filters on things. A generation who are very good at making it seem like life is absolutely brilliant, even though the truth is, I'm depressed. If you were to look at the Instagram feed or the Facebook feed of an individual, a young person who maybe struggled with mental illness or even tragically attempted to commit suicide. If you were to look at their Twitter feed, their Instagram feed, their Facebook feed, you would have no idea that there was anything wrong. Why? Because this generation have become professionals at masquerading themselves and putting on a performance for others. There's been a 42% increase in mental illness in the past 5 to 10 years, and you better believe that social media has a massive role to play and that increase, 42% increase. It's destructive. And not only is it destructive, but it's addictive. It's addictive, and that's what a major problem is that we all know from our own experience as well. And there's a guy called Simon Sinek, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of his stuff. He went viral a couple of years ago. He's kind of a business consultant, and he did a lot of work looking at this younger generation. He really focused on the millennial age group, which are the ones just before Generation Z. And he started asking the question, how do we rope in these millennials? How do we keep them content in the workplace? Because they're the first generation really to come out of this social media age, and employers are finding it really, really difficult to keep them content and keep them happy because they're so used to this fast-paced world where everything's entertaining and everything's quick-paced and everything's image-driven, and they're struggling to actually keep millennials in the workplace. And he does a lot of work thinking about the effects and the addictive effects of social media and talking about the chemical that it releases in your brain called dopamine. And you've maybe heard of it before, but dopamine is a chemical that gets released in your brain which causes addiction. And so whenever you know what it's like, maybe you get a text message or an email and it kind of feels good, doesn't it? That's a little hit of dopamine that you get. Or if you put a picture up or you put a status up online and it gets a like, that kind of affirmation you feel, you get a little hit of dopamine. It's a chemical that gets released from your brain. And it's the same chemical that gets released when we smoke, when we drink, and when we gamble. So what do we know about dopamine? It's highly, highly addictive. And because dopamine's so highly addictive, and because it's released from your brain when you smoke, when you drink, when you gamble, that's why we put age restrictions on all of those things. But the exact same chemical gets released when you engage with social media and these mobile devices. The exact same addictive chemical gets released, but there's no age restriction. Remember what we said? 94% of young people under the age of 16 have a Facebook account. In other words, 94% of young people under the age of 16 have at their disposal this numbing effect of dopamine, the same addictive chemical that gets released when we drink, when we smoke, and when we gamble. And so what he says, really, we've done to this generation of young people, we've pretty much said to them, if life gets you down, and just place them in front of the liquor cabinet and said, here you go, at your disposal, unlimited resources to dopamine, this highly, highly addictive chemical. Because adolescence is meant to be the stage of life, isn't it, when you discover how to interact face-to-face. Adolescence is supposed to be the time where we kind of work our way and journey our way through the difficult stages of life, and we learn how to deal with our problems by talking it out with other people and going to counselors and helping look into our parents and look into older people that we know and we trust and building genuine, authentic relationships with people. But now this generation of young people don't have that opportunity because instead of running to people, they run to a device. In the same way that an alcoholic doesn't run to people, he runs to the bottle. And you see, because this dopamine chemical is addictive, here's why that's significant. Because almost every alcoholic became an alcoholic because they tasted their first drink when they were a teenager. They tasted their first drink whenever they were going through adolescence. It became a coping mechanism because of dopamine. And that's the exact same thing we're doing with our young people. When they're going through the stage of adolescence, we're not teaching them how to be authentic and deal with their problems. We're just pointing them not to the bottle, to the device. Here's a coping mechanism. If life gets you down, run to the device. If you're feeling down, build yourself up superficially for a few moments by getting a few likes, getting a few hits, instead of building real, genuine, authentic relationships. There's a book by Jean Twenge. The book's called Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, and Less Happy, talking about this current generation of people. And she says, this generation, born between 1995 and 2012, are the first generation who are less likely to kill each other and more likely to kill themselves. This generation of young people are the first generation in the history of the world who are less likely to kill other people and more likely to kill themselves. Why? Because they've been numbed by this chemical of dopamine through their engagement and their hook on social media. Because like any addiction, ultimately it controls you and it will destroy you. Like any addiction. And this was tragically illustrated a couple of years ago. This was in the Belfast Telegraph, I think it was 2 years ago. An article of a kid who was on the verge of suicide, saved just from suicide at the last moment because his friend, Facebook friend who lived in China, had unfriended him. Someone he'd never met. He had no real friends, but his fake friend, who you hope was his age, you don't know who it could have been, from China, unfriended him, and he was saved from suicide. And as a result of this, as you see that problem, what you discover is that young people are starving for real, genuine relationships, aren't they? Young people are starving for real, genuine, authentic relationships. They're craving to be noticed, loved, accepted, affirmed, called by name. All of these things are craved from the current generation of young people because it's in some way distant to them. And so we've got to think through, how do we carry that ethos in our families? How do we carry that ethos in our churches? How do we carry that ethos in our youth groups? I would suggest there's a phase in your day, a time in your day where devices are banned, phones are banned, or a time in your week where devices or phones are banned and switched off, and not just switched off and removed, but replaced by a relational activity. So don't just ban them for banning them sake. Ban them at a specific activity. Go for a walk as a family. Go to a coffee shop. Leave the phones at home. Go for a bike ride. Don't just ban them. Ban them and exchange them with a relational activity. And try and teach our young people to build real, authentic relationships and get used to trusting people instead of just running to the bottle or running to the device. because that's how real relationships start, isn't it? When you're just chatting, everyday conversations, and then you happen to spark up a conversation. How did your job go today? How did your exam go yesterday? How was that thing you were worried about? We don't have those conversations now because when anyone's waiting around or sitting around, they're just on their phones. And so you see the massive problem, that social problem that social media brings. I think in youth groups, we ought to enforce, it's my opinion, enforce that people bring paperback Bibles as opposed to their phones, or as opposed to their devices. Because I think that's a habit you want to build in the young people, that they're doing their quiet times with a paper Bible, not because the word in your phone isn't inspired. Of course it is. It's the words, it's the text, it's inspired by God's Holy Spirit. But because it just removes another distraction, doesn't it? You probably know yourself how many times you could be doing a quiet time or reading your Bible on your phone or your device and something pops up, and you might not even read it, but you lose your train of thought. And so I think we need to encourage, my advice would be encourage paperback Bibles and encourage a culture where you're not reliant on devices from everything that you need. It's interesting, in Genesis chapter 3, obviously we see the fall where sin enters the world for the first time. And before Genesis chapter 3, the only thing that's deemed not good before the fall is when God says it's not good for man to be alone. So what's the one thing that wasn't good before the fall? It's not good for man to be alone. In other words, we are created for relationship. That's how God hardwired us to be. And I think one of Satan's finest pieces of works is to pull that relationship apart from each other, where we just are so addicted to our phones and devices and we lose the authenticity of real face-to-face relationship. There's a verse I've put down there on your sheet. It's 2 John 12. I'll just read it with me. It says, "Though I have much to write to you," this is John writing to the church, "though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you face to face so that our joy may be complete." Isn't that interesting? Here's John writing to the church, and he says, "I have a lot of things to say to you, but I'd rather not write them. I'd rather come and see you and talk to you face to face so that our joy may be complete." That's interesting. Here's John, and he could use the technology of his day. It sounds a bit stupid, doesn't it? Pen and paper was his technology. But he chooses not to use the technology of his day. Rather, he comes to have a face-to-face encounter. Why? So that our joy may be complete. John got it, didn't he? We are created for community. We are created for real, authentic relationships without the medium of a screen or even a piece of paper. That's how God created us to be. So you've got this addictive nature of social media. You've got the destructive nature of social media. Added to that is the sense of impatience. The sense of impatience. Young people today, you've heard it before, they're used to instant gratification. Anything they want, they can have it right now. You want to listen to a song, you don't have to wait for it to be released in CD. You can just go on YouTube, go on Spotify, and download it and stream it within 30 seconds. Everything young people want, anything we want, we can have it in moments. If you're Wi-Fi doesn't immediately connect, or if your phone tells you that you've got 4G and the internet doesn't go immediately, you lose it, don't you? Because that's the world we live in, instant gratification. I was reminded of this a couple of months ago. I ordered a charger from the other side of the world. It told me it would be here in 2 days, and it took 4 days. And it was like the world had ended. I was absolutely enraged. But that's the instant gratification world that we're living in right now. And so young people are used to having everything they want right now, but the problem with that is the things that really matter in life don't happen like that, sure they don't. Everything in our world right now, you can have right now, apart from strength of relationship with each other and spiritual maturity in your relationship with God. There's no app for that. That's not instant, that's a journey. That's a journey of perseverance. That's a journey of discipline. And so that's why today's generation struggle, because they don't have the perseverance in many regards, because everything else in life they can just have right now. But the things that really, really matter, they can't have just right now. I think one writer helpfully sums this up. He says, "In the 21st century, we live in a world which has shortcuts for everything, yet somehow we've got less time than we've ever had before." In the 21st century, we have shortcuts for everything, but quite ironically, we have less time than we've ever had before. This sense of busyness of social media and technology has ripped apart all of our relationships. And it's true, isn't it? You don't need to sit in and watch your favorite TV show now. You can just record it or watch it in catch up TV. Watch your favorite TV show at a time that suits you. Or don't have time to slave away and cook meals. That's fine. You can just pop it in the microwave or get these ready meals now and your meal will be ready in 30 seconds. You don't have time to text all your friends individually. You can now, with these new smartphones, just create a WhatsApp group and talk to all your friends in one place. And even if you have no friends, they've even created a little Feck man. He lives inside your phone, and you can talk to him about anything at any time just to the push of a button. We have got more shortcuts, more inventions to try and save us time, but quite ironically, we've got less time than we've ever had before. And we're a generation here in great danger of just wasting our lives by drowning it out by just the noise of life. And technology is in many ways counterproductive, isn't it? Because although it's meant to save us time, it makes us busier. When you leave the house or your office, you've got your emails with you. People can access you at any time, and you've got access to them at any time. And so I think we need to train our young people to take periods of solitude. I think it's a principle that we see expressed in the life of Jesus. If you want to see it once, you could go to the end of Luke chapter 4. It says Jesus removed himself from the crowds for a series of days, and he comes back. He was just meditating on God's word and praying, and he comes back, and the disciples ambush him with things to do and people to heal and demons to cast out. And what does Jesus say? He says, no. No, not because they're bad things. They're not bad things. They're good things, but they weren't first priority things. Jesus responded and said, I'm here to preach the kingdom of God. In other words, that's my priority. All these other things might be good things, but here's the first priority thing. And I'm not sure if Jesus didn't spend that time of silence and solitude in the word and removing himself from the busyness of life. I'm not sure he would have had the clarity as to what things in his life were first priority things and what things were just good things that weren't really meant to take first priority. And obviously, if Jesus needed that, then we need that. And I think we need to model what a good Sabbath looks like, don't we? The Sabbath was created for a reason. We are hardwired. God created us, and he created us within the rhythm of a Sabbath, one day where we remove ourselves from the everyday busyness of life. And I wonder how well your family model a Sabbath. That doesn't necessarily mean that Sunday's a day where, you know, I don't know, no TV or no this or that, the other. I think that we should try and encourage our young people, our children, to look forward to the Sabbath, a day where they spend time with family, a day where they can build up relationships with extended family, a day where they can really look forward to and remove themselves from the stresses and the pressures, not just of school, but the social pressures they're under, even with social media and in their friendship groups. How well are we modeling a Sabbath? And I think Kevin DeYoung, in his little bit Crazy Busy, it's a great book as well, he talks about the principle of a screen Sabbath. Maybe not just your regular Sabbath, but a screen Sabbath. One day where you remove yourself from all your electronic devices. And this might be something that you want to try and implement as well. Maybe a day where you say, you know what, on Saturday I don't need my phone. I don't need my laptop. I don't need to watch TV. And you have one day in your week where you just remove yourself from all your electronic devices. Obviously, you don't have to be legalistic about it. You might just choose one device and say, you know what, Tuesday, don't need my laptop. No laptop on Tuesday. But John Piper says, and I think this is helpful, the one good thing about Facebook is that it will stand to show on the last day that a lack of prayer was not due to a lack of time. Isn't that a challenge? The one good thing about Facebook is that it will stand to show on the last day that a lack of prayer was not due to a lack of time. So the social problems are clear for all to see. The busyness, the instant gratification, the destructive nature, the addictive nature, all those things conjure up the social problem of social media. But not just the social problem. Notice as well, sexually. Not just socially, sexually, the problems that social media and the digital boom brings us. Now remember, we're not wanting to demonize technology in this seminar. Maybe it sounds that way. We don't want to demonize technology. Technology isn't evil, but it's used within the context of an evil world. And so that's why it's used for evil. And you might be surprised to know that the current generation of young people don't actually smoke or drink as much as previous generations, but sexually they are far more liberal than any generation in the history of Western society. Sexually they are far more liberal than any generation in the history of Western society. And you see this, don't you? We've seen it recently, even as it's escalated to the transgender movement. Sexually, our young people are very, very fluid. And technology has a big role to play in the spread of why that's the case. And Christianity's pushed to the margins, primarily, actually today, in our land, for the moral premise of our bigoted views towards sexuality. And the young people really are facing the brunt of that discussion, because the young people are the most sexually fluid eggs segregation in our society today. And so that's some of the real pressures that they face as young people in their schools and in their everyday lives, because young people today, under the age of 25, know far more about explicit sex than any previous generation did over the age of 25. They are so accustomed to the sexual nature of the world in which we live in. And the latest statistics in the UK suggest that 75% of all young people, both male and female, are regularly watching pornography. 75%. And that's just those who admitted it. 75% are regularly watching pornography. And how it's legal, I'll never know, because the effects that pornography has on the brain, which continually get released more and more information to us, are just staggering. I'll never forget a documentary I watched maybe about 2-3 years ago now, and it was a documentary about criminals on death row. And one of the criminals was getting interviewed, and he was talking about all his other fellow inmates who were waiting to be killed on death row because they were just the worst criminals in the world. Here are murderers, rapists, pedophiles. He goes, "We are literally deemed the worst of society." And he says, "As you look around, all of us here on death row, we're different in so many ways. We have different upbringings. Some of us come from dysfunctional families. Some of us came from good families. Some of us grew up in really Christian families. We're from different parts of the world. Some of us are from the West. Some of us are from other places." But he says the one thing that unites all of us here on death row is that every single one of us had an addiction to pornography. Isn't that staggering? The one thing that unified all the people on death row was that they had an addiction to pornography. And the evidence just compounds the effects that pornography has on the brain. It's just staggering. And pornography, you can see on your page, is 30% of all web traffic. Porn sites get more views per month than Amazon, Twitter, and Netflix combined. And sadly, pornography in some ways is unavoidable online because of pop-ups and advertisements. And it really is destroying society. And current forms of social media like Snapchat just further encourage sexual promiscuity. I don't know what Snapchat is. It's basically an app whereby you can take a picture and send it to someone else, and the picture only lasts for so many seconds, say 10 seconds, and after that it's gone. That was the original premise of Snapchat. It's kind of evolved a little bit now where people can screenshot and save it to their phone, but that was the original premise of Snapchat. You could send a picture and it will be gone forever after some time under 10 seconds. And that really escalated the increase of sexual promiscuity and sexual images being sent from young person to young person. And this might shock you, but this is from George Clark, superintendent of the PSNI's public protection branch, who told me this. 1 in 7 young people in Northern Ireland have sent a nude picture of themselves to someone else. 1 in 7. Now, that probably shocks you, because it always shocks people whenever that statistic's shared with people who are parents or older. I tell that same statistic to my youth group or a youth group, and that doesn't shock them at all, because that's the world they're living in. More than 1 in 7 young people in Northern Ireland have sent a nude image of themselves to someone else. And Tim Challies, who writes a great book called The Next Story, I think it's in your list of recommended resources, says really that parents have 3 rules when it comes to safeguarding our children in the digital age. You can see it on your page. The first one is that you're to be a teacher. Secondly, you're to be a watchman. And thirdly, you're to be a gatekeeper. In other words, you're to guard what comes in and out. As there were gatekeepers in the Old Testament who guarded what came in and out of the temple, you're to be a gatekeeper. So firstly, you're to be a teacher. I think all of these are very helpful. Firstly, you're to be a teacher, and that means really we have to teach our children, perhaps now younger than ever, about the biblical view of sex. We need to teach our children more than ever about the biblical view of sex, and that might make you feel uncomfortable, but the reality is Satan is preaching sermons to our young people every single day about the world's view of sex through media, through songs, through movies, through web pages. And so the message of sex is being preached to them, and so we've really got the choice. Are we going to allow Satan to dictate the preaching, or are we going to dictate the preaching and teach them about God's plan and tell them really the better story with regards to how God intended sex to be? We always maybe have the joke about having the talk, don't you, with your children. I think the talk needs to be ditched for the talks. I think it needs to be an ongoing conversation with our children and with our young people regarding sex, because they are immersed in this every single day. And so one talk where you kind of buckle up and brace yourself and have it and think, phew, had that talk, that's not going to cut the mustard. So we need to have the talks. So firstly, we're to be a teacher. Secondly, from Tim Challies, you're not just meant to be a teacher, but you're to be a watchman. You're to be a watchman. In other words, you need to be continually watching and monitoring what is being viewed and accessed online by your children and in your household. I heard of a father who, he's got four sons between the age of 12 and 19. He was quite extreme, and he really set the rule in his house where he said, I'm the father of this house, I'm the head of this house, and at any time, for any of you four boys, even though you're between 12 and 19, I can lift up your phone, I can go through any conversation that you've had with anyone else, text message, email, anything, and I can ask what it's about, and I can read it, free rein, no secrecy, no PIN code. You might think that's quite extreme, but that's his way of saying, I'm going to be a watchman. I'm going to make sure I have access to everything that's being done in my household. Obviously, there's no foolproof way of doing this because kids always outsmart us in this area, don't they? But that's the precedent that he sent. And I don't know what way you want to be a watchman. So we're to be teachers, we're to be watchmen. And thirdly, then, we're to be gatekeepers. We're to be gatekeepers. And in that sense, as we said, just as in the Old Testament, there were gatekeepers who guarded what came in and out of the temple, so we're to be gatekeepers of the home. We're to guard what comes in and out of our house. And there's no foolproof way, again, of doing this. It's kind of like moral air pollution. If you live in Beijing, air pollution's all around you. But it doesn't mean you don't wear a mask when you go outside. You're going to breathe some of this stuff in, but you want to guard it as best you can. And there's some great resources that enable us to kind of guard what comes in, guard restricted viewing times, perhaps, and your internet router, you can block it off at certain times, and maybe have a centralized app whereby any app that gets downloaded in your household has to be approved by you as the central holder of the app. So there's many different ways, some of which we'll look at in a few moments as we end the session that are on your page. And the good principle, really, which is one which is often used, is that devices go to bed before we do, and we wake up before they do, to have times where it's just axed out of your schedule. So socially, there's challenges. Sexually, there's challenges. Thirdly then, and briefly, spiritually. Spiritually, and this is perhaps for many of us in the room the greatest concern. And obviously there are many effects that the social media age has on the spiritual well-being of young people, many of which we've touched on. Let me just give you a few more, as you can see on your page. The first one that's listed there is that young people are not used to investing in real relationships. As we said before, they're used to this world of instant gratification. They can have anything they want right now, but the same doesn't transfer to a thriving relationship with the Lord Jesus, sure doesn't. And so I think we need to encourage young people to get into the skill of knowing how to meditate on the Bible. I would suggest doing family devotions and modeling for them what meditating on God's word looks like. Just sitting with a passage, going through it, spending time thinking through it, applying it to different aspects of your life, spending time with the Bible open and modeling for young people and doing it with them to show them how you ultimately study God's word and ultimately grow in your relationship with God. It's not something that we can just do, read our Bibles, tick the box, and then go on with our day. Actually, no, we need to spend time and allow God's word to absorb into our hearts and allow the Holy Spirit to do his work. And so if we model that with our young people at home, because as parents, you're the primary influences of your children. You might not believe it. You think the youth worker is. You think Aaron is if you're from Hamilton Presbyterian. You maybe think Brian is if you're from the Baptist Church. They're not the primary influencers of your young people. You as the parent are the primary influence. You might not believe it, but that is the case. And so it's really important that this is modeled at home so that whenever they grow up and leave the house, they're already into the healthy habit of meditation. This is why I think young people struggle with prayer as well, because in prayer, there's no attraction to prayer apart from God himself. There's no images, there's no entertainment, there's no smoke machines. It's just you and God. And in the world of instant gratification, that seems difficult, doesn't it, for a young person? And so again, we need to model what prayer looks like. So that's the first challenge. They're not used to investing in real relationships. Secondly, and this is not the fault of the young people, but it's a consequence of the way people do church now and do ministry now, is that churches and youth ministries lose confidence in the Bible. With this ever-changing world, which young people are used to, churches sometimes try to respond, which is a good thing. We should respond. But how we respond is the key question. And sometimes this has resulted in churches and youth ministries and even maybe families losing confidence in the Bible. whereby you think young people can't handle the Bible, they can't handle it, they can't handle sitting down and reading God's word. They're just not really their culture anymore, and they sort of lose sight of how God actually instructs us to grow in our relationship with him, and we substitute it with all these bells and whistles and smoke machines, and actually that's doing our young people a total disservice, a total disservice. Just think through the Old Testament about how God uses young people. Think about some of the people God chose to use, Daniel, David, just to name two, people who were used mightily by God, even in the New Testament, people like Timothy, the people that God chose to use, young people, and he used them for great spiritual exploits. Young people are capable of great things for the Lord Jesus Christ, and we're doing them a massive disservice by saying that they're not capable just because our culture's changed. That's not the case. The way God created us has not changed. Young people are capable, and I think as the church, we need to be the forerunners of showing society what young people are capable of because of the transformation of the gospel. So that's the first two problems. Young people not used to investing in real relationships. Secondly, church and youth ministries lose confidence in the Bible. Thirdly, lack of commitment and accountability. What's so appealing about communicating through social media is that it requires nothing of you. Sure, it doesn't. It requires nothing of you. You don't need to walk over to someone's house to contact them. You just need to tap a few buttons on your phone. But not just that, there's also no accountability. And this is really on the rise with things like Twitter and Facebook, and that is people get used to saying things, rash things that they would never ever say in person, but they'll say it online. And that's where online bullying is prevalent, because people say things online that they would never ever ever say in person. Why? Because when you say something online, you're a faceless user. There's no accountability, no accountability whatsoever. And so that's why young people crave and are getting used to communicating and doing things where there's just no accountability. And you see this in relationships. They use Tinder, they swipe right, that's how they meet someone now. It's not through the awkward conversations of asking someone on a date, they just swipe right or swipe left, and they meet someone online, and they bypass the process of adolescence where you have genuine real relationships. Maybe when the relationship works out, they don't even know how to break up with the person, and so instead of having the difficult conversation, they just, what the young people call ghosting, where they just don't reply and hope that everything will be okay. Just avoid all that awkward conversation. Because young people now have no commitment and no accountability. And this is a nightmare when it comes to church. This is the bane of the youth leader, isn't it? Young people are flaky. That's what the world tells us. And in some cases, this generation is flaky. They struggle for commitment. And that's a big challenge for the church, isn't it? Because again, church, when done well, it requires commitment from us and it requires accountability to each other. And so we need to help our young people to see the value of commitment. And to see the value of accountability. And fourthly then, and finally, there's many reasons, but I've just picked four, the normalizing of conceited behavior. The normalizing of conceited behavior. As we've seen, young people are used to projecting themselves as something that they're not. And for all of us as Christians, no matter who you are, no matter what age you are, this is already a danger in the Christian faith, isn't it? Coming to church and wearing a mask. Coming to church and just pretending that you've got it all together. Young people now, because of the impact of social media and the normalizing of projecting yourself to be someone that you're not, they're experts at it. They're really, really good at it. And that's a danger, and we see Jesus warning of that all over the New Testament, particularly in the Sermon on the Mount when he talks about the Pharisees and he tells them they're hypocrites. And the word hypocrite is the word that would be used for a mask in a play. Someone would put on a mask, they would play a part. He says, you're a hypocrite, you're wearing a mask. You're an actor. And the best actors in the entertainment industry, you'll be aware, are ones who can be so used to wearing the mask and get so involved in the part that actually they blur the role they're playing with reality, and they actually nearly fool themselves. And that's a danger for all of us. But in the world we live in, with social media and the digital age in which we live in, it's a very, very normalized thing to be conceited and to project yourself as something that you're not and to ultimately be a hypocrite. So I think in all our relationships in church, at home, we need to be willing to be vulnerable with our young people. Show them what authenticity looks like. Be real with young people. Because of this world that they live in, these young people are craving authenticity. That's what they crave, authenticity. So as a parent, when you mess up, confess it to your young person. Say sorry. Tell them when you made a mistake. Maybe you've whipped, lashed out at them. Apologize. I think this is why in youth ministries, residentials are so, so beneficial, and camps and youth weekends, opportunities where they can remove themselves and the barriers go down and they can be authentic and they can be real. And young people desperately, desperately need this. So this at the end there, as we thought about some of the problems, how then can we talk to our children? How can we help our children? Here's a little acronym for team. We want to work together with them. We want to work as part of a team. Firstly, talk. Talk regularly to your child about their online activity. Tell them about its dangers. Be upfront with them and tell them about maybe some of the things that we've even looked at tonight and the dangers and threats that social media has. So regularly talk. Secondly, explore. As best you can, try and get into their world. It's very easy to stand at a distance when you're disconnected from their world, to tell them what to do or tell them how you think it is. But actually, your perspective can change when you actually understand better the world they're living in. Their image-driven world, the world that they've never known anything but. Try and explore as best you can. Try and explore the apps that they use, the games that they play, and try and become as educated yourself as you can. And I'm going to show you a few websites where you can do that. Then agree. Agree on your own family rules regarding technology. Agree on what you think is a good policy for your household. There's no blanket policy that we can just say that will work for everyone. But join together as a family and make a policy. And the key thing is, it's not just for the children, it's for everyone. So if you do it together and everyone plays by the rules and enforce it, because if you don't enforce it, the culture will never happen. So make sure you agree on what your family policy is and stick to it. So talk, explore, agree, and then manage. So manage the use of technology in your house. And as you said there, quite ironically, you can use technology to manage technology by some of the apps that are listed below. So just very briefly, before we wrap up, some of the challenges that you'll face from your young person. There's always going to be backlash. This is not an easy method. It's going to be a bumpy ride. I'm sure some of you have already experienced the bumpy ride and the backlash you get from your young people. And so just some of the challenges that you might face and just some things to keep in mind. The first challenge your young person might say, well, it's my friends are allowed to do it, so it's fine. My friends' parents are so much cooler than you. You're not a cool parent. You've got me on a tight leash. And a couple of things to remember, because this happens. I've talked to parents who they've had this accusation from their kid, and then they feel a wee bit guilty and feel like a rubbish parent. But some things to keep in mind when that accusation comes your way is, like, firstly, young people tend to lie, don't they, whenever they talk about what their parents allow them to do. Or maybe they don't lie, but they definitely extend the truth. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. Their friend might not actually be telling the truth or the full truth. The second thing to remember is they might actually be telling the truth, but the reality is that their parent isn't actually just aware of the dangers that you're aware of. So their parents might allow them that particular app or that particular website, but if their parents knew what you knew, then they wouldn't. And the third thing is to remember and to remind our kids that their friends never brag about the restrictions. They only brag about the things they're allowed to do. So for everything they're allowed to do, there could be 100 other things that they're not allowed to do. So keep that in mind as well. That's the first challenge you might face. Another one, I'm going to be bored. What else am I going to do? I'm going to be bored. And that's why we said make sure and replace those times where you limit social media. Make sure you replace it with something relational. Don't just sit in the house on a Saturday night and say, okay, we're going to sit in the house, but no phones, and not actually give an alternative option, which is relational. The time when you ban devices or come off devices, replace it with something better so they see the value in not having devices, not just a rule for a rule's sake, but actually because there's something better to offer. Thirdly, I'm going to be left out. All my friends are online, or all my friends use it, so I'm going to be the odd one out. And in some cases, this is true. And so the part of the E in team, explore, is to help us explore their world and understand their world. And the reality is all their friends probably are online. That is their primary way of communication. So instead of just having a blanket ban, make sure we manage what they're allowed to do and how they're allowed to do it. And I think a better way of doing this isn't just to say, here's times in the day where we're not allowed to have any devices. So don't say between 9 and 10, no devices. Rather, schedule it for specific parts of your day. So no devices before breakfast, or no devices at dinner, or no devices until your homework's done, or no devices until you've read your Bible today. Because that way, actually, you're just establishing healthy habits at which they can take with them in life. And they go through those exercises and go through their life instilling those habits, as opposed to just arbitrary times in the day when they're not allowed to use their phone. So a couple of advice. That's for perhaps more beneficial for those with younger children. A couple of pieces of advice maybe you want to pass on if your young person is a little bit older, maybe a teenager. Here's five pieces of advice I would give to a young person if I was giving this talk to them. One is to prioritize offline connections. Encourage your young people to prioritize offline connections. If they're a little bit older and you're having a real conversation with them, prioritize offline connections. Remember, we're created for relationships. Number two is, if they're a Christian young person, encourage them to maximize their technology for the good of the gospel. Maximize your technology for the good of the gospel. Remember, technology and social media is one of those things which we can redeem. We can be use it for good. Even though it's used for evil, we can also use it for good. And I'm sure Christians and missionaries in the past would have loved the opportunity to be able to share the gospel with hundreds of people in a click of a button. And that's what we've got, isn't it, on social media? With all the friends you've got, all the connections you've got, you can share the gospel with hundreds of people at the click of a button. Maximize your technology for the good of the gospel. Thirdly, take regular screen sabbaticals that we've talked about. Fourthly, mistrust your heart slightly. Young people probably think, this is no big deal, this is an overreaction. Social media is not that dangerous, the internet's not that dangerous. But I think we need to remind ourselves to mistrust our hearts slightly, because the sin is often bound up in complacency, isn't it? Even when you read through the Bible, complacency led Eve to think she could converse with Satan and not slip into sin. It led David to think he could take a second look at Bathsheba and not be tempted to lust. It was complacency that led Peter to think that he would stand by Jesus' side for better or for worse and not deny him in front of a teenage girl. We need to mistrust our hearts slightly because we're weaker and the flesh is stronger than we often think. And then fifthly, use online content to inform you, but not define you. Remind young people that social media is ultimately fake. All the things that you see are snapshots of people's life lifted right out of context. And so that big fancy holiday could come at financial debt that you don't see. That perfect body has been photoshopped beyond description. And so instead of being defined by social media, let the Bible and let the scriptures inform you and define you and give you confidence. We're out of time. Just really quickly, the resources there, I would really recommend that first website, netaware.org.uk. What that is, it's a website which will keep you up to date on all the latest developments in youth culture. So I'm sure if I said the word Fortnite or Minecraft or Snapchat, you're thinking, I've heard of that thing, my kid talks about that thing, but I have no idea what it is. If you go onto that website, it will give you a pretty good lowdown on all those things, what they are. It'll tell you why young people like them, why they enjoy them. It'll tell you what age it's for, and it'll also tell you some of the potential dangers that come with it. So it might say, you might read it and come to the conclusion, I don't want my kid near that thing. Or you could read it and come to the conclusion, okay, they can use it, but they can't have the online function available. It's a very, very helpful website. As is Common Sense Media, it's an American one, gives you more general guidelines. And all of those apps are very, very helpful as well with regards to safeguarding your home. I'll not dig too deep into them because I think time's up, and I'll pass over to Aaron.